Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are both with me and joining us just for the first couple minutes here. Owner of Apex Track Coach, Andrew Raines. Andrew, how are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, Mike. Really appreciate it.
No problem. So, to everybody listening, you might hear an ad at some point in the future from Apex, but wanted to introduce the product and Andrew to all of our listeners. So Andrew, I'll turn it over to you for a few minutes here and let you talk about what Apex is and how it can help somebody listening out there, and we'll take it from there.
Sure, man. Apex Pro is something I'm super passionate about. Growing up, going to IndyCar and sports car races, and then getting into motorsports myself. You know, I had to, as a kid, I always wondered where all the transporters went after the weekend, and inevitably that kind of led me to pursue a career in motorsports. So I worked up and raced myself in Pirelli World Challenge for a couple of years, and kind of pursued the sports car thing. And along the way, realized that the way drivers were using data acquisition to me seemed like homework. It was like spreadsheets and lots of math and stuff like that. And I got together with my business partners, and we developed the product that we now call Apex Pro. ApexTrackCoach.com is our website, and it's just a simpler, super powerful, but simple and intuitive way to go about learning how to improve your driving. It's got a lot of unique features, and we believe it's the future of motorsports data. And just want IndyCar fans out there to know that if they're going to autocross or club race or track days or interested in the sport at all and want to consider a tool to help them improve, Apex Pro is the way to go. And we are excited to partner with the show. You'll probably hear more promotions and things that we're going to be doing through Pit Lane Parlay, and hopefully just getting more and more involved with the show. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. So you mentioned the website. What about social media? Where can people follow along with your progress on social media?
On social media, we're at Official Apex Pro. That's on Instagram and Facebook. And then also like and subscribe our videos on YouTube. Hopefully anyone that's interested in driving or motorsports in general wants to learn how to get the most out of their next experience on the racetrack, check out our YouTube page. It's just Apex Pro on YouTube. Subscribe for regular content. And follow us along. We're super active on all social media. We want to hear from our customers and our users, and we want to know what you like about the product and what you want it to do differently. So let us know.
Yeah, one of our Patreon subscribers, Mr. Jason Camps, is a user of your product, correct?
Yeah. He was a really early adopter and has been definitely a big fan from the beginning. So huge thanks to Jason. You're the man. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, thank you very much for that brief introduction. Is there anything else you want to say about Apex, or are we good to go for the evening?
Well, I got a question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt.
All right. So without revealing too many trade secrets, let's say I was personally in Skip Barber and I had a rough weekend at Road Atlanta, and I came to you guys. What would you guys kind of offer as far as help, and what would be the kind of outcome of me coming to you guys for help?
Yeah, so the first thing is it depends on if you're using our product or not. We can help you a lot more if you're using the Apex Pro device in the car. But we have a lot of different options. So the primary way we would do that is through a data review service. So you can submit your data to us, and we do this on kind of a personal basis with drivers, but we can review your data and help you learn how to use more about it, or just how to get more out of the data itself. And then we also have like professional track notes for a lot of tracks from different pro drivers that are friends of ours that on our behalf will submit like how to get the most out of certain tracks and visual references and stuff like that. So a combination of different ways, but there's more features coming soon that'll be kind of connecting Apex Pro users with other Apex Pro users to talk about those types of things and get more out of their experience on the racetrack.
Excellent. Appreciate the insight.
Absolutely.
Jess, any questions on your end?
Yeah, man, I think you did a great job explaining exactly what you guys offer.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, thank you very much for stopping by for a couple minutes tonight. We appreciate that and look forward to partnering with you guys in the near future.
Yeah, man, we'll be at the Barber IndyCar race. We're fired up about it. I've got a good friend of mine was on Scott Dixon's team last year. He's this HPD engine guy. So he's the guy that's in charge of calibrating the motor and stuff. So shout out to Zach Woolen for kicking butt last year. And I hope he does good this year. A lot of my buddies are in the IndyCar paddock on the engineering side. So I always pull for their drivers.
So I know who I'll be trying to find when I get down there that weekend.
There you go.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much. We'll let you go. And you know, if you're interested, again, it's apextrackcoach.com and the social media that Andrew mentioned a couple minutes ago.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And thanks so much for joining us, Andrew. Definitely check them out on our social medias. Moving on to the news for the week. The biggest piece of news that came out this week was the topic we were speculating last week, in that Connor Daly was set to get the best Indy 500 ride in his career, and Jess correctly predicted that it would be Andretti Autosport. So Connor Daly will be driving the United States Air Force number 25 Andretti Autosport ride. He will complete the All-American lineup with that team. So Michael Andretti has said that they will not open up the Andretti stable to any more entries. So they just have the five cars with Veach, Rossi, Hunter Ray, and Marco. Guys, what do you think? Is this Marco's best chance? Do you think he's going to be a contender for the 500? We'll start with Mike.
First off, we're talking about Connor, right? Not Marco.
Correct.
Okay. Is this Connor's best chance? Yeah, for sure. You know, I hope he's able to turn it into a couple more races, like he's indicated and Michael Andretti has indicated. So, you know, great for Connor. I know he has to be thrilled to be in a top flight program. No offense to Dale Coyne's extra road car that he's been in the last year or two. But this is a huge opportunity, and I hope he takes full advantage of how strong his car is going to be for the month of May.
So as far as your actual question, is it Marco's best chance at the 500? Probably not. And as far as Connor's best chance, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't get much better. And I just want to make kind of a chuckle comment that you said they are only going to have five cars. Like that's nothing. Five cars is huge. It's not quite as big as six. I think it's pretty cool that they're keeping an all-American lineup, as they're calling it. And I'm really excited for Connor. I think he's going to do super, super good.
Guys, I was just really curious as to what you thought of Marco, even though we're talking about Connor. Can you blame me? It's my favorite driver. No, but and one thing we did learn from Marshall Prude article on Racer was that Marco Andretti actually did give Marco gave Connor $3,000 to help him with a budget for a test in 2015 with Schmidt. And I thought that was super cool. And something that's like the little things like that we don't hear about some drivers. I do actually respect, even though we do bag on Marco a lot, but that was super cool to figure that out. My opinion about it is I am cautiously optimistic. And I say that because the entry that Stefan Wilson was in last year wasn't quite up to pace with the rest of the Andretti squad. And I don't know if that was a Stefan thing. I don't know if that was because it was an extra entry. I don't know if because that chassis just wasn't up to par with the other cars. I do think it's his best shot. I did say a couple weeks ago that he had nowhere to go but up with his quality of rides, because all of his rides have been pretty garbage at Indy. So I guess we will see. Jess, do you think, am I on to anything, or do you think I'm grasping at straws? Do you think the fact that Wilson's fifth entry last year didn't perform as well, do you think that may be an indication of what we see out of Connor?
I don't necessarily think so. Honestly, with that many cars, any one of them could have just had an off day, you know? I mean, it's just kind of a crapshoot, really. But I really think that he'll do well. I think that he has a fighting chance. And I think that, you know, he's never going to, I won't say never. That's not necessarily true. I was going to say, I never think he's going to get a better ride, but that's not necessarily true. So we'll say he's never had a better ride is more what I meant with that. And I think that if he takes full advantage of it, like I think he will, I see only good things for him.
Jess basically just low-key indicated that daily to Penske in 4 years is happening. Mike, you got any thoughts?
I'm going to write that down so we remember it in a couple years. Yeah, it's a good question. I think you might be onto something, but I think the big difference here is, you know, Stefan Wilson has had, you know, extremely minimal seat time in the past couple of years, whereas Connor Daly, you know, not only is he had seat time, but he's had, you know, seat time in the new car, you know, prior to, you know, this year's Indy 500. So it should help him at least from a, you know how to, what to expect and what to expect out of the new aero kit. So I don't think it's as big of an indicator as you might think.
For sure. And it was suggested to Connor this week by certain people that he were to get a Patreon account, he may be able to raise more of a budget to race in future races. And we wholeheartedly agree with that here at Pitlane Parlay. We love Patreon accounts and we think that people who subscribe to Patreon are amazing. So if you want to check out ours and see a good example of one, you can check ours out at Pitlane Parlay, P-A-R-L-E-Y on Patreon. And, you know, we wholeheartedly hope that Connor sets one up and, you know, maybe bankrolls a ride out of that. You know, who knows? We'll see what the future has in hold. Moving on. One of the coolest news that came out this week was the video of Robert Wickens. For those who didn't see his Twitter video, it was Robert pedaling a bicycle without any sort of assistance. And I think we are gradually seeing the continued growth of his recovery and strength. And for those who are interested, next week, we actually pre-recorded an interview with someone who's going to speak to length about Wickens and his recovery, former neurosurgeon and race car driver. So make sure to check that out next week. Mike, any thoughts about seeing that video on Twitter?
Awesome. I, you know, every time I see a new Robert Wickens video, it blows my mind at the progress he's made where, you know, just what was it, a week or a week and a half ago, he's posting, oh, my left leg is unassisted, right leg is coming along. And oh, that's, yeah, that's pretty good. And now he's able to pedal a stationary bike without any assistance. I don't even know if I have the right words for it. But I'm thrilled to see the progress, and I can't wait to see, you know, what's next. Is he riding a regular bicycle? Is he just walking down the hallway at his rehab center? And one side thought is, I really hope he's the Grand Marshal at St. Pete to start the year.
Actually, that's a brilliant idea. I hadn't thought of the Grand Marshal idea. Good job. Good job. I will say that my real only comment about the bike video is he puts me to shame, and I'm gonna start getting my life together because of him. I mean, it's amazing what he's done, and like you said, I mean, the progress in just what, a week and a half, was just phenomenal. So way to go, Robert, keep it up. And like I said, you put me to shame, so I'm gonna get to the gym this week.
Maybe they should rename term one the Wickens Rossi turn. That'd be pretty cool. Now let's have a little bit of honesty hour here, guys. How many hours/minutes did you spend watching the Rolex 24 on Saturday/Sunday, Mike?
I watched, let's see here, I would probably say about 4 hours at the start. I watched a couple hours before I passed out around close to midnight. And then I rushed to wake up Sunday morning once I read on Twitter that the green flag was going to be 9 a.m. Got my life in order, only to see a little bit of a mess, for lack of a better word.
A kerfuffle.
Yeah, thank you. I was trying to figure out a better word than mess. Kerfuffle. So, you know, I liked the racing that I was able to watch. It was a great race. Unfortunately, the rain kind of put an end to it a little early, but still a good race overall.
Before we get to Jess, what are your thoughts about how they handled that?
I was not a fan. You could see as the cars got started again, you know, under yellow, there were cars hydroplaning just under caution, which is never a good sign. Drivers were coming on the radio saying, what are we doing? So, you know, it just, you know, I get why they're trying to do it. You don't want to have the last, God, 8 hours under caution or under a red flag, but there was, it probably ruined some people's, you know, finishing positions, but I don't think it was the right call.
And sorry, what I should ask first is, for those at home, you know, can you describe what happened to lead to all that?
Yeah. So the green flag at 9 a.m. as the cars went under, you know, caution again before it went green, there were cars hydroplaning because it was raining, monsooning down in Florida. Pretty much all, you know, all since about, I think it was 5 or 6 a.m. It was before I was awake. They ran about 40 seconds under green, about 17 cars spun or crashed into each other. Then it went yellow for another 2 hours, maybe hour and a half, 2 hours. They started again, another 37 cars spun out. And no, my math is not accurate. Although it might be, a bunch of cars spun out and crashed. I think one of the Ganassi cars lost his entire rear wing in an accident. Then they red flagged it, and that's how it ended. So it was, you know, a little anticlimactic. I'm happy for Fernando Alonso that he won, but I think the Penske number 7 entry would have been very competitive if they were able to stay under green flag. And shout out to that entry, because one of the crew members was Chris Fambro, who we had on a couple weeks ago.
All right, Jess, your turn for Honesty Hour, and any thoughts about it?
Okay, the first question, how many hours did I watch total? I would say really close to 10. I know that my cable box turns itself off after 5 hours, and it did that twice, once on Saturday and once on Sunday. So I would say really close to 10. As far as my feelings on how it ended, I've been there in some extreme weather a couple times, actually. One time it was bad enough that I stayed in my car for, I would say, probably about 6 hours overnight because it was just torrential downpour all night, and they never red flagged it. They kept it under yellow. I think I would have preferred them to keep it under yellow and have them try to work off the water, but I don't. It's honestly, there's not a good answer, because obviously the conditions were bad. It wasn't safe for them to go green. And it's kind of a waste for them to run under yellow. However, the whole point is kind of to see what cars they'll make it. So if you keep the cars running under yellow, at least they're running for the full 24 hours like it's supposed to. So it's kind of a toss up. I think I would prefer the yellow, but I get why they went red. They were trying to get some of the puddles off the track, but you know, who knows? Who knows what would have happened if they would have just kind of picked one way and just stuck with it instead of going back and forth, changing their minds kind of every 1.5 laps or so. I thought that the ending could have been better, we will say.
All right, well, sit back. I'm going to put you guys all to shame, so don't worry. I watched a whopping 5 minutes. I had a very busy week, so I didn't get too much chance to watch. I did follow pretty much the whole thing on Twitter when I was awake. So I don't really have anything to add. You guys summed it up perfectly. I will give a shout out to Team IndyCar representation who won, including Fernando Alonso, Colton Herta, Gonzalez, his first name escapes me. I know he raced in Champ Car for KV in 03 and 04, I believe. I think it's Roberto, maybe. And then, miraculously, somehow, even after crashing, Sebastian Saavedra still won. I don't know. I guess if IndyCar races were 24 hours, maybe he could get away with a crash and still win an IndyCar race at some point. I don't know. But so good for them. Good on them for winning, especially Colton Herta, who will be full-time in IndyCar next year. So good job. And on his team also was my buddy Connor DeFilippi, who I said in the last episode I was rooting for. So that entry actually won, so that's good. Moving on, we do have an IndyCar test coming up a week from tomorrow, February 8th. Sorry, if you're listening on a Friday, February 1st, it's today. We're still trying to work out these days on the show. It's a constant struggle for me, at least. So if you're listening on a Friday, yay, in 1 week there's a test at Laguna Seca. Your pretty standard entry list, if you've been following Silly Season, pretty much everybody who's full-time is going to be there, except for Harding Steinbrenner, Serta, and no Pato Award. There are two TBAs on the list. Unbelievably, none of them are coin cars. We do have one Carlin entry, who should, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, be RC Enerson, unless something kind of drastic happens towards the end there. And then we do have a Yunkos entry. Jess, shot in the dark, do you have a who that you want to throw into that Yunkos entry for the test?
Why do you always have to put me on the spot?
I've got an answer if you want to switch places.
Yeah, go for it. You go for it.
I think we're going to see Kaiser in the test. It's his closest track to where he grew up in California. So I would bet on Kaiser for the test.
It's going to be Canapino. Come on. That just fits the who thing, right?
I know. We have to have one who.
Actually, that does.
Just does Kaiser count as a who? Or is he?
Not the, really. Okay, no. I don't think Kaiser can count as a who.
Okay.
No.
Okay. We need to officially create a who flow chart so that we can determine what qualifies someone as a who. So I guess we'll narrow that down hopefully within the coming weeks, but we will have a recap of that test when we do record in a couple weeks here. So just stay tuned for that and follow us on social media for any news. Our Twitter handle again is Pit Lane Parlay, PARLEY. Let's toss it to Mike.
All right. First round of Patreon shout outs. Let's see. Jason Camps, thank you very much. And thank you for using Apex Pro. Our buddy George, Mr. David Lighting, thank you very much. Colin Taylor, thank you very much. Always enjoy talking racing with you on Twitter. And I'll turn it back over to Matt.
And I do have a special shout out. First of all, always, you know, I think all of our parents on the show here watch, all of us three's parents are always listening, so we do appreciate that. But I have a special shout out this week. It's actually for my future brother-in-law, Tyrone. Ty actually came up to me this last weekend and said that he was listening to our show, even though he knows, you know, he's kind of a new fan of racing, or, you know, doesn't know a whole lot about it. So we really appreciate everybody listening, including you, Ty. So just wanted to give you a special shout out and said, you know, thanks awesome. For listening, even if IndyCar is completely new to you. So hope to see you soon. We got a bunch of sponsor news like the last couple days, actually. Two of them today, in fact. The first one was a team driver sponsor update. Shell Pennzoil will be sponsoring Elio Castroneves again for his two races that he's going to be doing this year for Team Penske at the Grand Prix of Indy and the Indianapolis 500. On top of that, Shell Pennzoil has also said that they will be running on with Joseph Newgarden at select races, including the Indianapolis 500. So that isn't bad news by any means. And then two title sponsor announcements. The Indy 500 got their second ever title sponsor. It's the company known as Gainbridge, which again is part of that Group 1001. We talked about them a little bit after the Sebring Open test because they will be on Zach Veach's car this season. And on top of that, Long Beach's title sponsor is expected to be announced next week. There's going to be a press conference in Long Beach, and according to Racer, and I believe it was Robin Miller, it is expected that Honda will be the title sponsor for that race, which is a big get for them. I think they already have the title sponsorship for St. Pete Barber and Mid-Ohio, so they're definitely expanding outward again. Mike, any thoughts on those three bits of news?
Awesome, awesome, awesome. You know, it's great to see, you know, Shell step up and put a couple extra races in for Joseph Newgarden. We were kind of teased by Newgarden's social media over the past couple weeks as they prepare for the 2019 season. Gainbridge sponsoring the, you know, Indy 500 is pretty cool. You know, another sponsor who, you know, in overall in Group 1001, stepping up from, you know, not only sponsoring a car for a full season, but sponsoring something big like the Indy 500, sort of like NTT Group and NTT Data. So, I mean, you know, great news all around that sponsors are stepping up to the plate like this.
I couldn't have said it better myself, which also kind of makes me want to die a little bit because I have to agree with you again.
God, it's a good episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, sponsors stepping up. I think I've said it several times now in the past few weeks. You can't be upset about it. I mean, it's only good news. Obviously, that yellow shell car looks real good. So I'm glad to see them come back. And yeah, I mean, anytime you have a sponsor come on board, it's good. I know some people kind of turn their nose at a, it's not a title sponsor, but a presenting sponsor for the 500. So that it'll be the Indy 500 presented by Gainbridge. I know some people are not a fan of that because of the tradition of Indy, but I mean, you know, if somebody wants to step up and you know, be on board with the 500, that's a big deal. So I think IndyCar is looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, the people who are complaining about that probably still want the Indy 500 paved in bricks. You know, you just need to catch
times. True.
And as Jess said in pre-recording, yay, money. So that's always good.
Yes.
Moving on, speaking of money, former IndyCar sponsor, specifically with a couple of drivers, including EJ Vizo, the company is PDVSA, was actually sanctioned by the United States government this past week, if anybody's been following the news. PDVSA is based in Venezuela, and there's a lot of political turmoil going on in that country, so we just thought we would touch on that real quick and say that they used to be an IndyCar, and now they are in some hot water with the United States government. Can't imagine that's a good situation to be in.
Probably won't see them here again.
Probably not. I do believe they withdrew all of their funding in 2014 through All Racing. At least EJ Vizo was. I know Pastor eventually lost his sponsorship to in Formula One, Pastor Maldonado. Moving on, kind of a good news, bad news. The bad news is Courtney Force, one of the best funny car drivers ever in NHRA, is retiring effective immediately. So we won't see her in behind the wheel anytime soon. But the good news is that means you might get to see her at IndyCar paddock every now and then, a little more often now that their schedule is not incredibly hectic like it was. Of course, Courtney is the wife to Graham Rahal. So I'm sure if you're a big fan of Courtney or Graham that you'll be seeing them a lot more frequently at a racetrack near you. So that's good. But we wish her the best. She had a great career. And I guess we're looking forward to bumping into her at a racetrack soon. All right. Get on your knowledge caps. Time for me to stump the hosts. I got it this week. I will be stumping Mike and Jess. Just got to pull up my answers here real quick. The question, which of course I always give a question with multiple right answers, and we will alternate, Mike, so don't blurt out an answer.
Okay, right. I haven't done that in a long time.
We will start with Jess, and there are five total correct answers. Whoever gets the most right wins, and we will alternate. So starting with Jess, since 1990, we have seen five Formula One champions start a race at the Indianapolis 500. Can you name them? Go one at a time. We'll start with Jess.
Alonso.
There's one. Mike?
Oh, boy. Since you said since 1990, so Nigel Mansell?
Correct. Jess?
He picked my next one, of course. It never fails.
And it can be prior to 1990 winning an F1 title or beyond 1990 winning an F1 title?
Oh, Lord. You just got to make it harder, don't you? Mario
Andretti is correct. Mike?
Emerson Fittipaldi.
That is correct. Oh, gosh. I didn't have him. There are six right answers. Mike stumped me on my own question. Well, let's hope you guys don't tie because that would be boring. All right, Jess, you're up.
Oh, I feel like that he's cheating as per normal.
No, I am. My hands are tied. They're behind the chair.
I feel like you're lying about that. I'm coming up blank.
3 seconds.
Pass.
All right, Mike.
Jacques Villeneuve.
There's one. The other is a very notorious Formula One driver. And let's say.
Oh.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
No, you got it.
No, because he didn't win the championship. I thought I had it, but I don't.
Oh, well, I was hoping you'd say it just so I could laugh at you. A very you know, famous Formula One driver who, let's just say, did not have very good success at Indy. Wow. He may have gone to a hospital on his first attempt with very bad injuries.
Oh, no. I was going to say Teo Fabi, but that's not it.
Teo Fabi, a Formula One champion. Yeah, that would be the day.
Sorry, Teo.
Who is it?
Yeah, all right.
So Mike is officially the winner with 3 correct answers, even though I thought there was only 5. But the answer is Nelson Piquet. Nelson did attempt to qualify in his first one and had severe injuries to his lower body, his legs, but did qualify his second time around with Team Menard, but did retire with a mechanical issue. So that leaves us with Fernando Alonso, Jacques Villeneuve, Nigel Mansell, Nelson Piquet, Mario Andretti, and the person I forgot, Emerson Fittipaldi. Probably has something to do with the fact that I really don't like him. Something in the back of my mind that let me let him off the list there. So good job, Mike, the winner this week. Moving on, we did have a poll that we ran on our social media last week, and it was about who we thought would be the biggest letdown of the 2019 season as far as people who should be contenders. And by one whole vote, I did win that, so I'm going to brag a little bit.
That's fair.
James Hinchcliffe was the highest voted driver between himself, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Joseph Newgarden. So to those of you who voted, thanks for voting and pitching in, especially those who voted for me. So that's good. Thank you so much to everybody who did that. Moving on, we did have one Indy Lights entry announced today, and that was Robert McGinnis. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Perfect. I did not mess that up, quote unquote.
So, a little background for those interested. McGinnis ran for Juncos in the now Indy Pro 2000 last year, had a handful of podium finishes. I think he finished 4th or 5th overall in the standings. So he's going into Pato's old car, which is probably a good spot for him to be in. And he's got some serious sponsor backing. So that definitely doesn't hurt the Indy Lights program at all.
Yes. And when we do our IndyCar preview show, we do want to make sure that we touch on the Indy Lights entries. And there are should be definitely some more announcements between now and then. We'll definitely get more of an outlook of what the field will look like once we get to our preview episode. So stay tuned for that. Very sad news to report. Former IndyCar driver John Paul Jr. has been diagnosed with Huntington disease. For those who don't know, it's a non-curable brain disease. It just unfortunately deteriorates your brain and you lose some physical and mental cognition. Terrible news. John Paul Jr. was famous for winning one of the Michigan Indy 500s. I believe it was 84. So we wish him and his family the best through this very difficult time. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that or...
Well said.
Favorite memory of him, or if you remember watching him race at all?
I don't remember too much about his racing career. You know, I was pretty young when he was racing, but hopefully, you know, there is medical care out there that can manage it decent enough for him that he's comfortable. I know absolutely nothing about the medical care behind Huntington's disease. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to him and his family and anybody else who is affected by Huntington's disease.
Yeah, I can't really say much else either. I'm kind of reading about it right now. It sounds like it's inherited. There doesn't seem to be a cure right now. And hopefully, with some time, they will find, if not a cure, at least some treatment to help the people who are suffering. So thoughts to him and his family and friends right now.
So we are thinking of you, John, and your whole family. So we wish you the best. We will toss it over to Mike.
All right. Round 2 of Patreon shout outs. Let's see here. Thank you, Mr. Stephen King, Mike Knapp, Michael Goodyear, and last but not least, Matt Grunholz. And thank you to everybody who subscribes and continues to subscribe, and we should have some new content up there pretty soon.
All right, moving on. We're going to change it up a little bit. We understand that we may have some new viewers who like NASCAR or Formula One or endurance racing. And if you're checking us out, we are primarily focused on IndyCar. And while we touch on silly season every week or sponsor news or random other things that I like to vent about, like Sebastian Saavedra, what we may not have ever focused on is what led us three to loving IndyCar in the first place and why we think that you all out there should watch the sport. So we're just going to actually kind of break it down into as basic of terms as possible and kind of, you know, implore you all to check out IndyCar when the season starts here in a handful of weeks. We're getting pretty close, actually, about 5 weeks away.
Finally.
So I'd like to think that at least two of us are experts. I'd like to think I'm getting there, but I know Mike and Jess know what they're talking about for sure. So I'm going to kind of, you know, parlay them into some of these questions and hear some of their answers here about some just bare bones questions about IndyCar. So we'll start with Jess. And Jess, first off, what excites you most about the IndyCar series and watching the races?
The level of competition, I think. You know, obviously, these are some of the best drivers in the world. But compared to like F1 or NASCAR, you're always getting insanely good competitions throughout the field. You know, people will be fighting for 14th and 15th place just as hard as they're fighting for first and second. So I think there's just a lot of good competition throughout the field. People basically making it an exciting, entertaining experience.
Yeah, I think Jess, you know, hit the nail on the head there. You know, you can look at the list of roughly 20 something entries every weekend. And while there might be a favorite, you know, like a Will Power who's, you know, wins the Indy GP more often than not, it seems like you could pick almost half or more of the field to really be a contender every weekend. So I think that's, you know, what really separates it from, you know, especially other motorsports, but sports in general, because you can look at the NBA when the season starts and go, okay, we know who's going to be in the finals. You can look at, you know, other sports, you know, maybe to a lesser degree and figure out, okay, these teams are going to be good. But you get to IndyCar and, you know, a great example is Robert Wickens. You know, nobody knew what we were going to get out of Wickens as a rookie last year, and he wowed everybody. Coming close to wins, got a few poles, and you know, led a bunch of laps before his accident. So, you know, the fact that you can look at almost the entire grid, maybe save one or two drivers, and say they have a chance of winning is awesome to me.
Yeah, and you know, like you guys touched on, like, you know, any given weekend, anybody can win. That's not to say that, you know, there isn't a juggernaut out there. You know, Team Penske, Scott Dixon, and a couple of the Andretti guys, you know, they are forced to be reckoned with every week. However, you are prone to a guy like Sebastian Bourdais, who's not a slouch by any means. He's just not on the best team to win, you know, just randomly on a race weekend. So wholeheartedly agree. Whereas, you know, Alonso said with Formula One, showing up to a race weekend, you know, why even bother? You know, it's going to be a Ferrari or Mercedes, or, you know, if Verstappen doesn't run into anything, it might be him. So very much agree. Would you guys say that is primarily why you would watch IndyCar over other racing series? Or do you have any other thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, especially you know, if we have NASCAR fans out there that paid attention to the first open test today and the uproar on Twitter after, you know, it's just every weekend there's, you know, like I said, a different driver that can win. It's just overall the racing is great. It's, you know, like Jess said, passing for 15th and 14th place is a big deal in IndyCar. There's always a chance something can happen where, you know, right now in NASCAR, the engine package is so low on power, it doesn't look like there's going to be too much happening on the track this year.
I think another thing that makes IndyCar, I don't necessarily say better, but better to watch, is it's easier to keep up with the rules. You know, NASCAR has, oh God, what the segments, the timer thing, the competition yellows, the what is it called, where they only actually are going for the championship, the
stage
for
racing?
Like the last 10 races,
or like
the last 10 races,
the playoffs.
Yeah, the playoffs. The stage. I mean, like, there's just so many things to try to keep up with. It's hard for, let's say, a novice fan, somebody who only wants to flip it on once or twice in a season, to keep up with. In IndyCar, you know, they're all going to run hard, no matter if it's the first race or the last race. They're running for the green flag, and then they're going to run for the checkered flag, period. There's like no, you know, there's no craziness. They're not trying to win this stage or that stage or whatever. They're just trying to win. So I think it's a lot easier to follow for fans who maybe haven't checked it out or are into other types of racing. I feel like it's easier to follow than other types of racing are.
And within the last, 10 to 15 years with the social media boom, we as race fans have more access to racing than we've, anybody's ever had ever. And so we see racing clips of, supercars in Australia, endurance racing in Europe, anywhere that there's, a video, we're watching racing online. And so we're constantly barraged with these other racing series. So Jess, what is it about IndyCar that continually brings you back to want to watch it the next season versus other racing series? Why do you want to keep coming back and supporting IndyCar?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. And I think, one of them is what I touched on before. The competition is just so intense. You get your, we'll call them like mini rivalries because it's not super bad, but you get your little rivalries going on that you want to keep track of. And I think social media honestly has a lot to do with it. The drivers are very interactive with fans, and I think that's nice to see. It helps bring people in. It's just, honestly, it's just a good overall package.
Yeah, I think, not only that, but IndyCar right now especially has a great mix of, younger drivers, Pato O'Ward, Felix Rosenquist, that, look to be future superstars. At the same time, we see, Scott Dixon and, Will Power and, drivers who are a little bit older and at the other end of their career continue to impress every weekend. So it's a really great mix of young talent that's doing very well, like Joseph Newgarden winning the championship in 2017. And then the next year, Scott Dixon, who's been around for 17 years now, give or take a year. Sorry, Scott. winning the championship this year. So, that mix of, young superstars coming up and doing well while the veterans are still doing well, you don't always see in other forms of motorsport. So that's what keeps me coming back.
For sure. And us three are big on Twitter. Mike, how can fans watch races at home? What can they do to get more engaged? How can the average fan at home listening right now, how can they get involved with IndyCar?
So IndyCar does a great job of, live streaming stuff on Facebook and YouTube, especially whether it be something basic like a press conference or, an IndyCar driver doing a Twitter Q&A, which is how we got Joseph Newgarden on our episode last year. Back in just a little over a year ago, actually. So things like that are pretty cool and keep fans engaged, different, social media Q&As, with Instagram Live now and all this, new fangled social media stuff out there. I think they could continue to do more things like that. James Hinchcliffe was on a NHL All-Star talk show this past weekend, which I haven't watched yet, but I did record with an NHLer by the name of PK Subban. So both Canadian athletes. So things like that are, to get more awareness to IndyCar is definitely, will bring in new fans. So, check out the social media type stuff. Also go to YouTube and just YouTube IndyCar. You can watch entire races that IndyCar has put up there or clips that fans have put together. Some older, races that you might not have been alive to see, you know, back from many years ago are on YouTube and are pretty cool to watch and see how different it was. And at the same time, you can watch last year's races.
Another good way to keep, I guess, interest alive for the new fans, after you get on social media, you will probably notice things coming out from teams and sponsors about going to the track. You get to meet your favorite drivers. They do autograph sessions. I know, especially during the month of May, obviously they're in Indy for quite a while. The drivers will go to a lot of different places doing autograph sessions where they're just out meeting people. It's easy to get to them, unlike some of the other series where their drivers are kind of behind the fence and that's all you're ever going to see of them. The IndyCar drivers are more available, obviously, on social media. We just talked about that. They do a lot of Q&As and so they're interactive that way, but then it's easier if they're, you know, in your area. Let's say you're down here in Florida with me, St. Pete's coming up, start watching those social media, even just the track social media, because they will post where your favorite drivers are going to be, where you can go meet them and talk to them and get a picture with them. So it's awesome.
And to really quick touch on what Mike had said about checking out IndyCar on YouTube, for those who may not have the time to watch a two-hour IndyCar race, within the last 2 years, IndyCar has been doing an excellent job at posting these fast-forward highlight films, which is basically the meat and potatoes of a race. It's about a half an hour long, and it kind of gets you the key moments of the races, you know, any incidents or passes for the leads or dramatic twists. So if you're literally just looking for maybe like an extended highlight reel of a race, you know, definitely check that out for sure. Their YouTube channel has been excellent the last couple of years. So starting with Jess on this one, Jess, what's your favorite part about going to an IndyCar race and just the whole weekend at the track?
Just the atmosphere. I mean, it's alive. Everybody's excited to be there. Everybody wants to put on a good show. You get to see a lot of people that, you know, maybe you don't live near or you haven't seen, let's say, during the off season or whatnot. If we have people listening right now, Mike for sure will be at almost all the races. I will be at a few. Matt's going to be at a couple this year. And we're just going to keep coming back. So if you guys see us, come and say hi. And, you know, we'll show you around.
Yeah, I will be at pretty much every race outside of two or three. So if you see us, come say hi, we'll talk racing, walk around, whatever you want to talk about. I always love to talk about racing with people at the tracks. So come find us. You can find us by looking at the logo on our shirt, even if you don't know what we look like. But, you know, I just love, you know, the atmosphere at IndyCar tracks. Everybody's in a good mood. Fans are happy. There's stuff going on. Most tracks have gotten really good with, you know, having plenty of different food options or some sort of entertainment like a band or, you know, go-karts at the track or whatever. There's always other stuff to do to keep you entertained during any downtime. And for the most part, you know, everybody is approachable, whether it be a driver or you know, somebody who works for the team or who works for IndyCar. In Jay Fry We Trust. Just in general, everybody is typically in a good mood as long as they haven't gotten screwed over on the racetrack.
And I'd like to think us three are very approachable on social media and at the racetrack. And if you are new to the sport or racing in general and you have a question, whether it's something a little more advanced or something that's very basic, feel free to tweet it to us. Our Twitter handles are attached to our profile on Twitter if you want to find us three. If you don't know what a yellow flag is, please do not hesitate to ask. There is no such thing as a dumb question for us three. You know, we'd happily explain anything to you. So, you know, feel free to approach us at the track, on Twitter, whatever. If you have any questions about the sport, we'd happily discuss anything with you. One last question. From my point of view, I'd like to think that athletes in other sports, like maybe football or basketball, you know, some baseball players, you know, there are exceptions. One that stands out to me is a guy like JJ Watt, who's doing a lot for his community and a lot to help fans on Twitter and interact with people. There's definitely exceptions, but for the most part, I feel like athletes in other sports are not very interactive with their fans, or, you know, are not very responded to some of their wishes. Mike, what are, from your point of view, what are IndyCar drivers like, and what sets them apart from other athletes around the world?
They are approachable to the point where they could be standing on the grid about to step in their car and still take selfies with you. Now, not all of them are, you know, super chatty. Some might be a little bit more reserved and quiet, but, you know, still take time out of their busy day to engage fans, you know, whenever possible. Somebody posted a picture of Alex Rossi on the grid at the Rolex 24 last weekend, taking a selfie with a fan, literally with a helmet in his hand, getting ready to go in the car. So, you know, for the most part, they are, you know, more than willing to take a selfie or sign an autograph or chat for a minute or two, you know, which you don't get for the most part in other sports. You can't go up to Nick Foles right before a football game when he's on the field and go, "Hey, Nick, can we take a picture and talk for a couple minutes?" So it's pretty cool that, you know, IndyCar allows that accessibility and that IndyCar drivers are, you know, 9.9 times out of 10, you know, willing to go, "All right, let's talk."
So I wanted to point out one thing. You were talking about us being accessible via social media or whatever at the track. I always like to tell people, you said there's not a stupid question. People have asked me questions that I don't know the answer to, and I always go out and I find them an answer, whether I'm a team or, you know, just doing research. So if you have a question and it is an advanced question and I don't know the answer, I will say, "Hey, I don't know right now, but I'm going to go find out for you." So that's just a side note. Anyways, as far as the drivers, yeah, you're always going to see them out and about. You're going to see them at the track. You're going to see them at autograph sessions. Like I said, you'll see them at different events in the different cities that they race in. You know, a good example is the media tour for the 500. They go all over the country and go out and visit people who might not otherwise have a chance to meet them. So I think they're very accessible. I think they're very personable. Now, obviously, guys, there's some times when you probably should not approach them like a bathroom. I did a couple tweets about people being followed into bathrooms. Pippa said she had somebody follow her in the bathroom at Indy, and I don't remember who it was, but one of the drivers at Daytona this past weekend had a person, a fan, follow him into the bathroom. Guys, come on now. But you know what? I bet if you would wait by the door and say, "Hey, I'm really sorry to bother you right now. I just wanted to say good luck," they would be cool with that. Just don't follow them in the bathroom. That's a little bit much.
Well said. And, you know, just to kind of put a bow on everything, yes, IndyCar is, you know, the best racing series in the world, on the track, off the track. It has a lot of positive factors to it that help it make it, to my opinion, the best racing series in the world, between the drivers who are super friendly, the teams who put in a lot of effort to put a good on-track product, people behind the scenes within IndyCar like Jay Fry, the PR staff, everybody else involved, the aerodynamics department, the very loyal and contributing sponsors, both financially or, you know, some of the title sponsors like Firestone, Honda, Chevrolet, NTT. There's a lot that goes into making the IndyCar series great. And last but not least, the fans out there, such a loyal following of IndyCar. And you can see that definitely every May at the Indianapolis 500. It is the biggest single day sporting event out of any sport in the world. So, you know, Mike, Jess, thanks for kind of taking us through a tour of what makes IndyCar great. We really hope you guys do tune into the series once it starts here in a couple weeks. And obviously we will continue to, you know, report on everything and give recaps of the races and whatnot. Before we get to the pitfalls, I think we have to do a couple sponsor shout outs.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you to Andrew Raines and Apex Pro. You'll hear an ad starting in a couple weeks on our show, and be sure to check out the show, Indy Philly, IndyePhilly.com. every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. for somewhere else to listen to the show if you happen to be in front of your computer. And then on race weekends, once the racing season starts, you'll hear it on Sunday mornings at some point as well. So pretty cool there. And with that, we can jump into the pitfalls. Matt, you want to start?
Sure. So it was when Mike was referring to fans going up to drivers before the race and taking selfies on the grid. I think he was alluding to a photo that Jeff Gluck had posted to his Twitter from the Rolex 24,
yes,
in which people were actually approaching Alexander Rossi and taking selfies with him while he was standing next to the car, which is super cool if you ask me. My pitfall was a response to that tweet in the form of Brad Keselowski, who is in senior, who took a exception to what Gluck was saying, or some of the replies in Gluck's tweet saying, quote, "I understand and appreciate the desire to be close to the cars, but this sentiment in your feed that it's holding NASCAR back is absurd." Well, in my opinion, I think there are a lot of things holding NASCAR back, and one of them is the limited fan engagement that fans have access to the garage and the paddock and the drivers, between the fact that it costs you nothing short of a kidney to get down to that access level to afford that kind of thing, whether it's going up to your favorite Team Penske driver for an autograph and they are behind a bank teller type glass system where you have to feed your hero card underneath some sort of bank telling system, you know, like you get at a bank, to get an autograph, I think is absurd. Like I said, I don't think that there's one specific thing holding NASCAR back, but opening up their level of fan engagement to allow them to access the drivers and the cars and all the other things that are something that IndyCar does really well at, or like a organized autograph session, it definitely can't hurt to have that happen. So I'm taking exception to what Brad Keselowski was implying on Twitter, saying that it's not holding them back. I think it is, to be honest. I think it's something that they could definitely do a lot better at.
Yeah, I agree. Don't even need to expand on that one. I'll go next. We'll save Jess's pitfall for last. Speaking of NASCAR, the NASCAR Twitter world has imploded with the Las Vegas test today. The test itself was pretty unremarkable. A lot of people saying the lack of power on cars is pretty pretty embarrassing, and a lot of drivers aren't too happy. Kyle Busch described it as so easy to drive the car that the media could drive. So I think we need to get a NASCAR ride, guys. We can do some sort of ride share with Patreon. But I mean, NASCAR is not off to a good start in 2019. That's for sure. And, you know, not too much to say on that one, but, you know, NASCAR fans attacking journalists who are critical of NASCAR is certainly embarrassing.
I'm not sure if you're, well-versed in what the NASCAR rules are for this year, but I'm keep reading online that they basically are saying that every race is going to be a restrictor plate race this year. Is that what you're understanding too?
I think so.
Because I think Kyle Busch had umbrage with it today, stating that it's not necessarily going to come down to talent. It's going to come down to, you know, who can survive, which I don't know if that's the best look. I don't know if Jess has any thoughts on that.
Honestly, I mean, I really try to not pay attention to NASCAR at this point. And that's not really... I'm not trying to knock on them any harder than we already do. But frankly, as I kind of said earlier, I just can't follow it anymore. They have too many little nuances during the race that it just takes so much away from the actual racing and what it used to be that, frankly, I just don't pay attention.
Fair enough. All right, Jess, you are the last pitfall of the week.
Okay, so I was cruising around on motorsport.com today, and there was an article, and this was actually written a few days ago. I'll be honest, I can't remember exactly the date, but it was titled something along the lines of F1 rules that you might have missed, and... So I just opened it up, not really thinking a whole lot about it. And there was a lot of fluff in it, you know, what their new all their limits are, you know, things that are like way, way beyond my scope of knowledge in F1. And then I got to the middle of the article and I'm pretty sure I dropped my phone, my chin hit the floor, I picked my chin up, and then I reread this four times to make sure I had read it correctly. So I took a picture of it so that I would make sure that I get this right. But teams starting in 2019 will be allowed to quote unquote scrutineer, aka they will be allowed to do their own inspection on their cars. I had to read this three times, mind you. Like I said, my chin was on the ground. So they are to be scrutineered before their first free practice, which is usually on Thursday. 18 hours before that, they are to submit their documents of them investigating their own vehicles, mind you, to FIA. And FIA is stating that they obviously still retain the right to inspect the cars at any point over the weekend, blah, blah, blah. They fully expect that all teams will still fully comply with the rules. I'm sorry, what? So you're telling me, FIA, that you're going to let your teams, quote unquote, investigate their cars themselves before they go out on the track? Okay. And you really believe that they're all going to, you know, apply to your rule? I've just got nothing. So, I mean, I've seen some pretty interesting ways of attempting to cheat in my time being around IndyCar. I've been around IndyCar for about 28 years now, and I've seen some things that have made me, first of all, scratch my head, and then second of all, I've seen some things that were pretty dang impressive and pretty ingenuitive ways of trying to cheat. And you honestly believe that letting teams check their own cars and inspect their own cars is going to make them want to follow the rules? What? No. Obviously, this article didn't have anything to say about after-race inspections. I'm assuming, and I'm like, you know, holding my hand up to the sky, I'm praying that they inspect the cars after the race because, seriously, come on, how many teams are actually going to follow the rules? And this doesn't even say anything about, like, after qualifications. I'm confused because one of the other rules that was in this article was, moving them on the grid after they've changed an engine or anything like that. That's all changing this year also. So how are they even going to know if they changed an engine if the car's not being inspected to begin with? So, quite literally, my mind is just blown by this rule, and I'm not really sure what F1 is trying to do here, but the FIA, in my opinion, is not doing the right thing.
If you can't tell, Jess had some feelings about that.
I think even NASCAR is laughing at F1 right now.
Well, and like I texted you two, it's like Ferrari is the scummiest team when it comes to like breaking rules and things like that. You know fully for a fact that they're going to do something shady and try to get away with it. So they better have some swift punishments if they catch them doing anything illegal.
Oh, like I said, I mean, I had to reread this three times because it literally only says that the car has to be scrutineered ahead of the first free practice and it has to be 18 hours before the start of the first practice. It never talks about the cars ever being inspected again. I'm like, wait, what? So can I bring my car over? Because, okay.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to see some interesting things out of F1 there. I'm intrigued to see how bad it's going to go. With that, one contest announcement before Jess ends the episode. We did this last year and it went pretty well. So leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. send us a quick screenshot of it. Sometimes it doesn't show up in the app for a couple of days for whatever reason. Just send it on Twitter DM or however you want, and we will pick. I don't know, what do you guys say after the Circuit of the Americas test? We will pick one winner who will get one of our new T-shirts with our new logo that you see all over social media right now. So get them in before the end of the test, we'll say. So that's Wednesday the 13th at, I don't know, 5 p.m. Central Time, give or take, will be the end date. So you have, you know, about 10 days here to get those reviews in. And, you know, thank you to everybody who's been listening, or new listeners like Matt's soon-to-be brother-in-law. I forget his name. I'm sorry.
Tyrone.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. And thank you to everybody. And with that, Jess, go ahead and sign it off.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you to everybody. And like we said, please reach out if you have questions. We would be more than happy to answer them. So guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcast Delete Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.